Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio again today with live music. It's going to be provided by the Varshavsky-Shapiro Piano Duo, and they consist of Stanislava Varshavsky and Diana Shapiro, and henceforth they will be Stassi and Diana for the balance of the hour, just to keep things straightforward. They are going to be playing Friday night at Farley's House of Pianos in Madison, and it's an historic concert because it involves, well, two pianists and two pianos, one of them the restored Villa Louis 1879 Centennial Grand, and then also involved in the concert will be a sort of a twin piano from 1877. And these newly restored by Farley's House of Pianos, and then I assume that the Villa Louis one will soon be moving to Villa Louis, so you'll have to go over there to hear it. But in Madison, the concert, which is sold out, by the way, is Friday night at 7:30. There will be, however, what might be called an overflow concert featuring much the same repertory with the same pianists on Sunday, July 1st, with a pre-concert lecture at 4 o'clock on Sunday by Tim Farley about the restoration of the pianos, and then the concert starts at 4:30. Okay, now we can finally concentrate on Diana and Stassi here in our studio at our Hamlin and Mason piano. Welcome.
Hello, Norman. Good looking, afternoon.
Looking forward to having you here. Now, how did you, we need some background as to know where you came from and how you became a duo.
Both of us were born in the former Soviet Union. Diana was born in Moscow, Russia, and I was born in Ukraine. And both of us immigrated to Israel. Diana immigrated in 96, I immigrated in 95, and we met there.
Yeah, actually, the story of our meeting is quite significant to our being. We met in the class in the Jerusalem Rubin Music Academy. It was a seminar for piano duo when you have about 10 to 15 undergraduate pianists to attend the class, and they just paired to play together to explore the wide variety of a repertoire for piano, four hands or for two pianos. And then after that meeting, actually, I thought I'm never going to play with that person again. And now look, it happens in 96, and we have been playing ever since.
Now, wait a minute. Why did you think you were never going to play with that person? This was a decision on your part, or this was something that you regretted that you would never get to play with this person again?
No, it was definitely an informative decision from my side. Just because, you know, I really felt back then that you need first to be able to agree with person on everything before you even try to play things. And some of the opinions that Stanislava Stassi expressed back then were definitely clashed with my own points of view at this point. So I decided, no, I'm not going to, not even to play with this person, but also become a friend.
Right.
Because you have to have personal connection when you play with somebody.
What happened?
Our professor back then, Alexander Tamir, he asked us as a group about opinions, different opinions on the same piece. And I have opinions that was differ from everybody else. And he was very curious why it's so different. And I started explain first. And then somehow we started arguing. It wasn't
You and Diana, you mean?
No, with my professor.
Oh. With the professor?
Yeah, and he wanted me to explain everything, and he wanted me to argue with him.
And I actually was sitting in the corner. I was very quiet back then. And I was thinking, we grew up in the same culture that doesn't encourage to argue with a professor.
Yes.
Even if you disagree in some important points, so you just keep it to yourself. And she was so surprisingly refreshing for me. Her behavior was so different that it basically shocked me.
That you were shocked at your own arguing with the professor, you say.
I'm sorry?
You were shocked that here I am arguing with this professor.
Diana mentioned that we were growing up in the same system. And both of us, it was unacceptable to argue with professor, with a teacher, with somebody who is older and respectable person.
Mm-hmm.
But he could started.
Alexander Tamir, he himself was part of a famous duo, Eden
yeah,
and Tamir.
Yeah, I think they were the leading Israeli piano duo for almost 50 years, he and Bracha Eden. She died in 1996. However, I think they established the respect for piano duo in Israel as a country, and they actually really encouraged young pianists, especially undergraduate pianists, to try their hands on this really new repertoire.
Now, how did you work this out, though? Here you're playing. I mean, did Stasi manage to convince you on all points, Diana, or how did you work it out?
With time, I really started appreciating that to have your opinion and to know, to have a courage to express it, is actually a plus.
Well,
so I
sure.
think I studied it from her, and we're still arguing sometimes, but it's part of the process.
As long as you don't do it while you're playing the piano, but... is there a repertory? Are there pieces now that you can't play because you don't agree on them?
No, I think we play everything what we wanted. I mean, Diana wants to play something, we try immediately. I learned with years to try everything, absolutely everything, even if it sounds from first look incredible.
Oh.
I try anyway.
Yeah, and I learned from... playing with Stasia, that it's okay to express different opinion, and it's okay to be just different from everybody else.
Oh, so you've worked out at least several pieces here that we're going to be treated to, some things that you presumably agree on now?
I hope so, and they agree uh-huh. most of the things now. Yeah.
And we're going to start with some Mozart from the sonata in D, the first movement.
Thank you.
sounds like an opera to me. Sounds as if you had a couple of singers there almost competing at times in that Mozart.
I do think so, that all the Mozart's piano music and all instrumental music, it's kind of an opera scene. That's why he's a king of opera. And I'm glad you picked it up.
The difference between, for a performer, the difference between playing piano four hands, that's two pianists, one piano, and playing with two pianos and two pianists. What's the difference from a performance standpoint?
First of all, when we play, when we play one piano four hands, we have the same space, which sometimes can be very close, and we have one pedal, we have one sound. Sometimes it has to be identical, sometimes it has to be very different. When we have two pianos, each of us has her own space, and own pedals, own two huge orchestras, I would say.
Yeah, but, you know, it also requires a special, as she mentioned, that the space is tight, so it does require a special hands choreography.
Yes.
Especially if we play pieces that were not originally performed or written for one piano four hands, then the choreography becomes also the matter of survival. Because we do share the same piano, but we have twice as many notes as a solo piano.
Sure. Well, I mean, I know you're not playing any Schubert today, but Schubert supposedly would arrange the score so that he would actually have to reach across some nice young lady's hands to play his part, and there was a little engineering, social engineering there in the way some of the things were laid out.
I do think so, that personal connections and social connections and sometimes sibling rivalry actually stimulated the development of the field in the 19th century. Because if you look backward, a lot of composers who had siblings or husband and wife teams as a duo had more established or needed to write something for their teaching purposes or the, had more established and more wide repertoire for the medium of one piano four hands.
Sure. Well, and Mozart was an example. Of course, his sister Nannerl was an accomplished pianist.
As well as Mendelssohn was his sister.
Sure, yes,
Fanny.
That's yeah. Right. And then, of course, Schumann and his wife, Clara. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the piano duet and the piano, two pianos, were very popular ways of making popular a piece, because not everybody had a symphony orchestra in their home, but they had pianos, and you could sell a piano four hands version of a piece, and like the Slavonic dances of Dvorak, for example, and become very popular that way.
And I think it's a great way to make music that actually was written for a big performance medium like orchestra, is to make it more accessible to a regular house. I know that it was a favorite, like, parlor time for like times for in the 19th century when there were no internet and television, of course. Mm-hmm. But people liked still to communicate and also explore the wide variety of sounds. And you know, you feel totally different when you listen to music, and you feel totally different when you put your hands on. You just touch how it sounds, how it feels.
I would think so.
On the other hand, it's a great way to communicate, as both of you mentioned, and talk through music. Sometimes we don't need to talk verbally, we need to talk pianistically. We ask questions, we answer, we play, we have different sounds, as I mentioned before, and we have the same sometimes.
And I hope music is always a story. For me, music is always a story. Whether you have the title that kind of provokes your thoughts, or whether it's very abstract, but then you make up your own story. So for me, it's very important to find a story behind the piece.
Well, how about something Russian next, a little something by Stravinsky?
Yeah, so we will play the Russian dance.
Well, now you're moving around, okay?
Yeah.
And now why is that? Because you take, is one part more prominent, more important than the other? Is that why you're moving around here?
No, one part is not more prominent than another. But first of all, you just need to know the duo pianists are different, the real duo pianists are different from solo pianists in respect that we don't have a personal ego. Who's sitting on the top.
Okay.
So we, you know, each one of us has more strong, you know, some styles.
Sure.
And when we decide what we're going to play next, we don't think, okay, I'm going to sit on the top just because I want to be the star of the show and be up front. No, we just think, okay, this probably suits better your personality. So it's going to contribute to our own success with that composition, and that's what guides our decision.
So Stasi will be at the treble, and Diana will be at the bass for the Stravinsky. Is that what I'm seeing? Okay. That's the Russian dance from Petrushka by Stravinsky. And boy, does that take some coordination, not just of the rhythm, but of the space, that pretty narrow space of 88 keys that our piano duo is working with. I should mention, as long as I'm on the topic of the visual, that Friday night's concert by the duo will be recorded by Wisconsin Public Television for later broadcast, and that concert's Friday night is sold out, but there will be another concert, very similar repertory, also featuring my guests today, the Warshawski-Shapiro Piano Duo. That concert will be on Sunday afternoon, July 1st at 4:30, also at Farley's, and we'll be back with our duo right after this on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back with the Warshawski-Shapiro Piano Duo, and we're just heard a dance by Stravinsky. We have some more dances, actually, now that I look at that, it will take us down to the quiz question. These are by Ravel. They are not, however, French dances because they come from his Rhapsodie Espagnole. Very common for French composers to go to Spain to get inspiration. Certainly true of Ravel. What would you like to, let's see, it's going to be the Malagueña?
Yeah, it's going to be a second movement out of the suite, Malagueña, the wedding dance, and then the Feria.
The lively Feria. bravo. And as you say, it is not just playing the piano, it's choreography for four hands. I mean, doing all kinds of things, crossing your own hands, but then crossing each other's hands too, occasionally.
Yeah, and as you may know, of course, it's everything is planned. There is no unplanned.
Yeah.
You can actually get injured.
Yes, not room for spontaneity there. No. We'll be back with the Warshawski Shapiro Piano Duo. They're right here playing live in our Buck studio this afternoon during the midday. Now back to our duo, the Warshawski Shapiro Piano Duo. They are Stasi Warshawski and Diana Shapiro, and now they're switching around sides again. And this time we're going to be hearing some more Russian music, and it's two pieces by Rachmaninoff. This is from a set of six pieces by Rachmaninoff. And they are, a scherzo, and then you think of Tchaikovsky as being a waltz writer, but not so much Rachmaninoff. A little bit different.
I would also say that Rachmaninoff explored the genre very much. We're going to play on Friday his second suite for two pianos. It does also have waltz.
All right, so here's one right now, after the scherzo. scherzo and just now the waltz from Six Pieces by, would you have guessed that was Rachmaninoff if you heard it out of context? Does that sound like Rachmaninoff, typical Rachmaninoff to you?
I think it sounds early Rachmaninoff, before he found the waltz.
That really Slavic voice.
Yeah, and another part of that cycle is actually a piece named Gloria that is actually was very patriotic, has a theme taken from a patriotic song. So yes, it's very Slavic and nationalistic cycle of Rachmaninoff.
Got it. Okay. Back with the Warshawski Shapiro Piano Duo live from our Buck studio. And of course, the repeat of today's 12:30 quiz question right after this on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now, this piano that you are going to be playing, Stassi and Diana, these pianos, I should say, that you're playing at Farley's Friday night and then also Sunday afternoon, these are 1877, 1879 vintage pianos. Is there a challenge, particular challenge to playing those pianos to bring out the right kind of sound or get the right touch?
I think it's a great privilege to be playing on those pianos because I think it's from our career, from our experience, it's very rare to find two pianos that are so closely matched. And I'm not talking about the tune. I'm talking about the building inside, about colors that you can make out of that piano. So it's actually, I can count on one hand fingers how much time I had this privilege to be able to build our sound together by using two almost identical piano. And I think that I really appreciate the time that Tim Farley, he's not just a businessman, but he's also an artist who is really ready to appreciate the quality of the instrument he has given. So I think it's not challenging. It's quite interesting because if you think that most of the pieces we're going to play were written about 20 years after those pianos were built, so maybe Rachmaninoff as a child had one of those pianos, and maybe this is the sound he had in mind.
Usually when we play on other instruments, different instruments, we need to take extra challenge to make it sound better. Usually it's unfortunately, yes. And sometimes we need to find additional colors, how to do it, how to press and how to have the right touch for it. When we played, just yesterday we played on these pianos, and it's so easy. You don't have to try so hard at all. It just sounds. Yeah. By itself, almost.
It's a quality of instrument and book.
Now, we're going to end with some Gershwin. And what about this arrangement of An American in Paris? Where does this come from?
It comes from our personal interest to explore American music and American composers. We really like Gershwin for many reasons. I mean, his music is so beautiful. But then we discovered that he has a version of American in Paris that he wrote for two pianos, as many other composers who first wrote two piano versions. Stravinsky, for example, and Petrushka wrote for keyboard, for single keyboard, though. And then they orchestrated it.
Right.
We listened to that, and Stasia came with, I think it's a brilliant idea to give it a new look. Like a facelift. So she actually put a lot of effort trying to fit all the interesting material from the orchestra score
those
in
car
one
horns
piano.
And that kind of, how do you do the car horns?
You will hear it. Not today, on Friday when you hear the full version, because today we are going to play just a demo version to give you a taste how it sounds on one piano.
Okay, so this is A2P. Anything from you, Stassi, about this American in Paris?
It was easy to work on it because it just here. I didn't want to hear two pianos version as often as I would like to hear orchestra version because it's many things are missing there. But when you hear orchestra version, it's so easy to take everything from there and put. It's difficult to find space because it's just one piano for hands, you know. But since you know it, we did it together. It should be like this way. Yeah.
Here we go.
So it's a demo version. Thank you.
An American in Paris, the radio version for today, a demo, as Diana is telling us. George Gershwin, of course, for four hands, one piano, two pianists, and watching your 10 fingers is a little bit like watching the chorus line at Radio City Music Hall. Or lots of lively steps there.
Thank you.
I.e. the two of you, Stassi and Diana, the Warshawski-Shapiro piano duo, you're based in Madison area?
At this point, we live in Madison.
And do you play here and there around the state? Or, I mean, you travel much?
Yeah, we just won the national audition for Astral Artist. So,
you just won a national audition?
A national audition in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations.
And actually, it's one of our many competitions. And we're actually quite booked for the next season.
Oh,
so
you're quite booked.
Always not lovely.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and thank you for coming into the midday today.
Thank you so much for having us.
They'll be performing on those historic pianos at Farley's House of Pianos to Friday night at 7:30. That concert is sold out, but there will be another one on Sunday, July 1st, with a 4 o'clock pre-concert talk by Tim Farley, the restorer of these historic pianos. And then the concert at 4:30, both concerts similar repertory. And it will be recorded by Wisconsin Public Television for later broadcast.